Back again, the Jew function, trying to figure out the function of the Jew in the system of humanity, and hopefully, hopefully, in the process, solve anti-Semitism and bring the world to some sort of a happily ever after kind of situation. How's it? How are we doing so far, you think?
I'm waiting for the big reveal. I think that, you know, what is a good movie? If the character wakes up, has a great day, goes through life, has a great life, everything is perfect, and then he passes away at a very old age in his sleep. There's no drama. So I'm hoping that all of the drama now is just for the big reveal, you know, to make the movie emotional and powerful, and to bring out how good everything can be. Maybe that's how I'm trying to frame it now. Maybe that all of these things, like there would be no, if there is something behind these people, these Jews.
These Jews.
Yeah.
Not these Jews.
If it wasn't for the anti-Semites right now, that story would be buried somewhere. That their relevance would be buried somewhere, and humanity would just be trudging on. So I'm hoping that through the help of what the anti-Semites have already laid out on the table, it gives us an opportunity to discover what kind of good future is possible, to have a conversation, and hopefully people are interested now to understand what the heck is going on, and we don't just go through our lives day to day, go to work, get a job, retire, yeah, die.
That's boring too, right?
Also very boring.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for a while, but you know, there's got to be something beyond everything, and I think that this has to do with what we're trying to do as well. So, you know, when you talk to older people, a lot of them are kind of what's the word? They resign themselves to the idea that anti-Semitism is something you have to live with. Don't make too big of a fuss about it. It's fine. Let it blow over, right? There's a lot of that the older you get, but the younger you get people who are really who have kind of strong feelings about things, much more sensitive, socially sensitive, much more open, and they're voicing their ideas, and they're trying to navigate this, frankly, crazy reality, right? Between the rise of anti-Semitism on the one hand, and then this weird new brand of political correctness and everything in between. It's a tough world, but I'm happy that we have someone from that generation that might be able to help us shed more light on it. I would really want to hear her take on it, how she views it, and maybe she can help us figure out what to do, how to bring those ideas of unity that anyone who's been listening to the podcast knows we're interested about, how to bring those ideas to the Jews first and then to humanity later.
How did the world let the world come to a place where the Holocaust happened?
And why would any good God do this?
What is a Jew? To you, maybe.
Okay, we're born into it, so I don't know why we keep judging one another.
The root of who we are, actually, is like a microcosm of all of humanity.
Because it's human interactions that change people's perspectives. It's nothing else.
Rather, faith is a quality of love in nature.
And I know you guys keep mentioning how the Jews need to unite, but it's more than that. You have to take it a step further.
A sports personality, an activist, a successful podcaster.
The goal is for all of humanity.
Emily Austin, very happy to be here with you. Emily.
The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?
My dad's side of the family is from Bulgaria. The last name came from my dad's side, obviously, and he's Bulgarian, and his family traces back to Bulgaria as long as I can remember. But when Hitler invaded Bulgaria, the prime minister, president, he was protecting the Jewish people, but they killed him, and he successfully invaded. So when they fled, they didn't want to identify as Jewish, and the last name got changed.
So you're like third generation in the U.S.?
Basically. So my parents were actually both born in Israel.
Oh, okay.
But they were both raised in Brooklyn. So they moved here very young. They were like both children. And all of their parents, each and every single one of them, was from like a different Middle Eastern country. So we're just like a huge melting pot of Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
And wait, before you ask, I'm just curious to know what made them leave Israel?
Opportunity, work. Their entire family is still in Israel till today. So we always go back. So I don't know why they would want to isolate themselves in America, but they did well for themselves here. They had like good life. They made a lot of money. It's good.
Yeah. I was there for 20 years. I mean, I get it. So I get the appeal.
Yeah.
And Seth, what did you want to ask?
I was going to say that the general image of Jews from the outside is that we're some kind of homogenous, especially right now. There's like a big thing about who are these Ashkenazi Jews. There's a, there's such a feeling that it's just one homogenous group, but you said that all four of your grandparents come from a different country. There's so much to this story, the Jewish story, but here's in particular that it needs to be aired out.
Yeah.
Do you know what the countries are?
Yeah, of course.
So what are they?
My background?
Yeah.
Iraq, Yemen, Turkey, Egypt, Greece, because my
grandma. So you're not a white girl from Long Island, obviously, right?
My family's not.
No, but I mean, this is where you come from. You know, you say you're I'm Iraqi, I'm Yemenite. It's like, it's a totally different kind of perception, but people kind of look at us and right away package us in a certain way. And we need to spread these wings and tell the story.
So that begs the next question, which we sometimes ask, and that is, if we're not this race or ethnicity, as we know we're not, and a lot of people these days lay claim to the Jewish faith, the Jewish something. I don't even say what. It's not a race, not even a religion per se. But so, how would you define Jewishness? Like, what is a Jew to you? Maybe if an alien came and you had to explain, what is it?
Simple. I would say it's a religion. Like, people argue, you're not Jewish, I'm not Jewish. I mean, technically speaking, anyone could convert to Judaism, you know? So I hate when people say, like, you're not Jewish, I'm Jewish. And you're like, that could change, you know? The same way a Jew can, I mean, technically speaking, convert out of Judaism. Like, it's a religion at the end of the day. But if you actually bother to study the history of it, you'll see it's less, I don't want to say less of a religion, but there's a whole culture to it. There's a whole history behind it. And Americans, probably more than Americans, like, no one understands the history of it. They don't understand, like, you know, Moses, Aaron, Abraham, and like the beautiful parts of the story and the not so beautiful parts of the story that make it much more than just like, you know, oh, we pray three times a day and we keep kosher. It's like, no, there's a whole history to it, and it becomes more of a culture.
So that was a simple explanation.
Like, if an alien came, like, it's a religion, but it's more, but like, just to keep it easy, it's a religion. So if you have more questions, talk to someone smarter.
Wait, if I were the alien, I would ask, okay, so what is a religion, actually?
A religion is something of a higher believing that you're putting your faith into. And then I would say, like, the three main religions are Islam, Christianity, Judaism. And then you'd be like, how do you become it? And I'd be like, hey, we're born into it. So I don't know why we keep judging one another. Then I'd explain, like, it pretty much has the same common denominator, the Old Testament. But then here's where Christianity differs with the Virgin Mary and Jesus. And here's where Islam differs with Muhammad the Prophet and Jesus again. And then just kind of explain, like, the main differences. And I would leave it at that.
Well, okay.
Hold on a sec. What about a Jew, though, who doesn't follow anything, but he's still very Jewish? I mean, we all know those people. Actually, probably we are those people, right? Like, we don't follow every rule, the tefillin and the, you know, only eating with the two sets of plates and all these things, but we're still totally Jews, right?
Yeah. Listen, like I said, you're born into it. Like, Judaism goes by the mother. So if your mother was Jewish, you're Jewish.
Side note, and we talk about it in some other video, there were times that they went by the father. So just to make it more complicated.
We'll make it more. We'll just add more fuel into this fire.
Yeah, just more fuel, exactly.
Listen, I went to public school, and everyone around me was Jewish, but nobody was really Jewish. Like, I don't want to say that, but like, let's say on a Friday night, I never went to like all those extracurricular activities, and I'd be like, "Hey guys, I can't. My parents will let me go out Friday night because it's Shabbat." And like my Jewish friends would be like, "Really? That's so weird." Or like the fact that we sit at like these round tables in middle school and have lunch together, and I could never eat the school lunch because it's not kosher.
Mm.
And all my friends would be like, "Oh, why can't you eat these chicken nuggets? They're so good." And it's my Jewish friends, but it doesn't make them less Jewish. I guess it makes them less observant. I personally, like, and I'm not saying this in any judgmental way, I found it interesting when like I'm sitting next to a Jew and we're talking about being Jewish, we're talking about our love for Israel, and we're eating bacon. And I just think it's like, I don't know, it's a little ironic.
That's very Jewish. Like, that's a very Jewish thing to do, though.
It is very Jewish.
we're full of contradictions.
Yeah. I mean, what we're trying to get at, I think, is that maybe the thing that you can define Jews by is not necessarily their religion or anything, which, by the way, you can't really convert out of it, because we spoke to a guy from Australia who went to he's an author in Australia, and he went to like Jewish summer camp, like these Orthodox Jewish summer camps, and the stories they kept telling them there were, well, you know who's the last people that Hitler put on the trains to Auschwitz? Like, who? All those Jews who converted to Christianity. So converting out doesn't really
right.
help you get out of it as well. So maybe it's not a religion in the simple terms of it, where that you can change your kind of set of beliefs or faith, or you know, I go to not the temple, but now I go to church. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it is a set of ideals instead. Maybe there's certain things that we value, right?
It's definitely a set of ideas and values. I mean, like the obligations that you're supposed to fulfill, it's less of an obligation, it's more of like how to cheat life. Like, there's a reason behind everything, you know. Kosher is like probably like one of the hardest things.
It's a big one, big life hack, right? That's what
it's a saying. Life hack. Like, just follow the rules and you'll succeed. No, there's a reason behind everything, and if you bother to study it, you will. Like, and you know, I tell everyone, like, oh, I keep kosher and it's so frustrating, but like, I'm always gonna do it. But if you really want to look into it, it's just a healthier way of life. The big picture, arguable, of course, everything's arguable, because at the end of the day, it's simply, and like, again, you can't really technically convert out of Judaism, but you can choose what you believe in. You can choose how much you observe. You can choose what you do, because that's God gave us all free will. But at the end of the day, like, if a Jewish person or a Christian person says, you know, I believe in Jesus and Mary today, or next week, you know, I believe in Muhammad the prophet, you're putting your belief, and then based on that, you practice a faith. Now, does that really make you fully Muslim, fully Jewish, fully Christian? No, there's like this gray area. And I think the reason we call it a faith is because it's literally a blind faith. We don't see God. We don't communicate with him anymore. And it's something that you need to want to do. Or some people do it out of fear. Or some people do it because they don't have a choice. Some people don't practice at all, like we said. And it's simply personal to each person.
So maybe it's a psychological thing. We can maybe
it is 100%.
Okay.
It's a belief. It's something your brain tells you to do or not.
Right. So, but what if there was a way? What if we found out that there is a way to actually connect with, tap, feel a deeper or higher force in nature?
If there was a way, a lot of people would definitely have more faith. A lot of these, did I lose you again? A lot of these people who maybe aren't strong enough believers would probably start believing more. A lot of people argue, like, I've spoken to atheists, because atheism, I will never understand. If you're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, I don't care what it is. If you believe in God, I have respect for you. An atheist, I'm just like, what's wrong with you? full transparency. But imagine like an atheist, you know, being able to like see or talk, or it'll never happen. But like, imagine.
It's a
reality check.
Emily, it's a pretty messy world. Like, you grew up in a family that gave you a strong identity and pride in who you are. It's a really messy world out there. like very messy. There's a lot of problems. There's so much corruption. There's more than enough money. There's more than enough food, yet people are starving and people have nothing. And it seems so unfair. And so if somebody didn't grow up with a good foundation, like we did, you know, with the family who kind of gives you some kind of value or tells you this is, you know, this is the North, this is where we're going as a, you know, this is who we are, then it can kind of, I'm not defending the atheists. I kind of agree with you. How is it possible? But I can kind of see how a person who doesn't, like, for example, we all know our parents and our grandparents, and we know where we came from, and it all informs how we make decisions and who we are. There's a lot of people who don't have that, or were totally disillusioned by it, and they're stuck now. They don't know what is going on and why.
I think he's just playing devil's advocate, but I have a counter response.
Yeah, I'm not defending atheists. I'm just saying that I think there's a reason why, because the world we're living in is such a mess right now. And why would any good God do this?
So that's one. Right. All right. So why would any good God do this? Second thing is, okay, after 2,000 years of institutionalized religion, alongside the good things that religion did to, you know, to organize people's lives, there's just a lot of bad stuff and corruption and, you know, human nature at play. So people are like, you know, why do I need, you know, there's already, you know, corporations and politics. Why do I need a third corrupt institution to hang on to? So, you know, we'll take that off of the list. So I think people are reacting to those things that they're seeing and feeling.
I agree, but, you know, how do I phrase this? Okay, there's been many atrocities in the history of the world, but we could talk about the Holocaust. It was not even 100 years ago. People think it's like, my sister, a shame on her. She's like, the Holocaust wasn't 100 years ago? I'm like, this is what you're learning in school. This is horrible. You know, if people come out of the Holocaust and still believe in God, you can't say it was from their family. There's plenty of 10-year-olds whose entire families were slaughtered. Who even knows how they believe in God after seeing what they saw? How could you possibly still have faith in something bigger, something that's supposed to be helping you in life, protecting you, something you put your heart and soul into, and then you see that happen in front of your eyes? You know, and a lot of Holocaust survivors, not only that, they're actually stronger, connected to God, which personally, again, on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, I don't get that either. And I remember I had a moment where we went to Poland when I was like 16 with a trip, NCSY. And a lot of kids on the trip were like, I don't believe in God anymore. And I was
after
seeing like children's graves and like picking bones from the dirt, horrific. And, you know, I guess as a 16-year-old, it's like when you hear something, you kind of want to resonate with it. Like you want to be fitting in. And I was like thinking about what they said to see if I could relate in any way. Like, do I not believe in God anymore after seeing this? But on the contrary, I was mad at God. But me being mad at God still showed that I believed in
him. You had a relationship with him.
Right. I was like, how could you do this to your people? How could you do this to humanity? And as much as I tried to not pretend he wasn't there and be like, God wouldn't let this happen, instead I was like arguing with him. And it just kind of reinforced like, look, even when I'm so angry at him, I still have that relationship.
That's
I would understand atheism. It's
a high level soul we got here, Leo.
Yeah.
But a second point is I fear people who don't fear God.
Right.
Because you have, you know, a lot of people you meet in life in this crazy world, you could tell they don't give a damn what people think about them. But at the end of the day, you know, we have morals, we have ethics. But if you don't believe in God, you don't have a set of morals and ethics that God gave you.
But hold on. It's great. This is a perfect setup for the next point I want to bring into this conversation. And that is, we exist in a society that actually encourages people to drop those things that they as kids probably feel intuitively are correct, right? And we also, every parent raises their kids to think that, you know, we have to relate to others in a certain way, that there's maybe something bigger happening here, and you feel those things. But as you grow up and you kind of start to make your way into society, you also intuitively feel that society will reward you for being a bigger egoist, right? It's the best athlete, right? You deal with athletes, the best athletes, it's the most vicious CEO, it's the biggest this, it's the richest that. It's, you know, that's what our society rewards, right? Yeah. Even they took something as wholesome and as uniting as food, and they made that into like a cutthroat competition somehow, right? Just as an example. So how do you reconcile those two things? What's happening here?
It's a problem because at least in America, society can't dictate anything religiously to you. And there's so many, especially in America, so many different religions and people and atheists and probably religions that I don't even know of, possibly.
There's 3,800 belief systems in the world. So
imagine, like, you know, in a democratic country, how could someone like almost impose it on you or talk about one and not another? It's just, there's so many problems that it's like, where do we start and where does it end? And I think it's more of a personal thing. Like the biggest athlete, the most successful athlete could still have an amazing relationship with God, or on the contrary, like someone, you know, the most rich CEO, successful person could be an atheist for all you know. I mean, I'm sure that right. Very possible. And that's why it's more like, I think it's just personal. I don't even, you know, it's such a tricky question. I don't even believe it comes from the family, because I know a lot of atheists with like Orthodox families and vice versa. I guess the question, the magic question is like, how do you make faith connect to human beings? How does a human decide what connects with them and what doesn't? Or maybe some people are just stubborn and like, I'm too good for a higher belief, which again, people like that scare me. I don't trust you.
Right. Do you want to dig more into that? I want to actually put it aside for a second, this whole thing, and then circle back to it later, because I want to bring into the you know, the whole kind of purpose of this talk, which is talk about anti-Semitism a little bit, and then we'll bring that thing later. Are you guys okay with that?
Sure.
Okay, super. So this hate for the Jews, have you experienced any of it?
Yeah, I ran for Miss New York. I think I was 17, going on 18 maybe.
Right, so the Jew function. A lot of people ask, what is this and who are we?
Are we anti-Semitic? Are we self-hating Jews? I heard that also.
We're like you. We're concerned citizens. We did our research. Hours and hours and hours of research into historic patterns, into Jewish texts. And I mean a lot of Jewish texts. Going all the way back to Abraham and other notable sages and Kabbalists and all the way into the recent era, you'll be surprised how much amazing quotes exist about the need for Jews to unite. So that's why we're doing this podcast. Like us, hit the bell thing on the YouTube so you can get a notification when a new episode is up. Share it far and wide. You know, find something that you like. YouTube lets you cut clips. Share that clip with a loved one, with a Jewish friend, with a non-Jew who's like bothering you at work about something, and we're like, oh, that clip is exactly what I needed. Share it far and wide. Commenting is a great way to get a conversation going. And let's get back to our guest.
I think I was 17, going on 18 maybe, and I didn't win. There's so many beautiful girls. And the girl who won, or she was second or third, we took a photo together, and someone came up to my dad who was taking the photo, and he goes, you know why your daughter lost, right? She looks like an Aryan and your daughter looks like a Jew. And oh. I was like, did he just say what I think he said? Like, it was so, I went to Jewish school. I grew up in a Jewish community. It was so like foreign to me that people hated the Jews. Obviously I heard of it in history. We were slaves, we were prosecuted, we were slaughtered, this and that. And Israel were attacked on a daily basis, but that's more for Zionism. But for me to actually hear with my ears that this guy comes out of nowhere, you just paid to watch us compete, and now you're telling me I look like a Jew. First of all, what does that mean? Right. Second, why are you, he didn't say it in a funny way. He fully meant like, she looks like Nazi Germany and you look like a Jew. And like, it was so disgusting to me that, you know, I'm 17 years old and you're still going to come say that in front of me to my father. I'm surprised my dad didn't kill him, honestly. But that was kind of like the first taste I ever got. And honestly, it didn't bother me too much because I am not a sensitive person. But to see what's going on in society, like, although it bothers me in a way where it hurts me to see a person judge another person based on a faith, because I would never judge a person, again, well, if they're atheists, for believing in Islam or Christianity or Buddhism. It's like, kudos to you for having something that you believe in. Kudos to you for having a set of morals and ethics that you stand by. You have a backbone. You know, it's like, imagine judging someone because they believe in something. And it seems like when it comes to the Jews, we're an exception to the rule. It's like, no, it's okay to hate on Jews because they're not the victims. They're all the CEOs. They run the media. They're all wealthy. And it's okay if we hate on them a little bit. But why are we the exception?
Good question. Why?
Yeah, that's an important question. Let me make one more discernment. So you made a line between atheists over here and believers over here.
Yeah.
So far. Okay, so now we have the pile of believers over here, the whole group of believers. What happens when you get a guy like Ye, who is a believer? He's really into Jesus. And a believer then is presenting as anti-Semitic. Then what happens?
I mean, there's more than Ye. You could look at ISIS. They kill in the name of God, and it's the worst example of Islam they could possibly portray, because that's not what Islam stands for. And yet they kill Jews thinking they're doing a good thing and they'll be rewarded in the afterlife. And it's pathetic. But Ye is a whole separate category.
The reason why I bring him up is because it's closer to us culturally. And
right.
We all listen to his music, and we all had some kind of relationship with his work.
It's just difficult to break it down because it's so clear, and anyone who disagrees is just as crazy in my book. He lost his mind completely. He's clearly lacking medication. He has more than bipolar disorder. He's out of touch with reality. And it's like, to everyone that's taking him so seriously, my question to them is, why are you taking a manic person so seriously?
Fine, so let's put him aside. I want to get to the point. So then what about Kyrie, for example, an athlete? Did he lose his mind also, or what's going on there?
Brooklyn Nets just gave me a gift. Huh. It was their 10-year anniversary, and it's funny. But Kyrie, personally, I met him a few times, and I've never found him to be a hateful person. And I think in light of finding his identity as a Black person, he maybe got into this crossroads of, you know, there's a huge division between Jews and the rest of the world, I think. And a lot of times we're like to blame and I think Kyrie came across that movie, which was completely false and misinformative. But to be real with you, what Kyrie did was simply dumb. I don't think it was hateful. I think I don't think he watched the movie. I don't think he read the book. I think he maybe saw a quote. He liked the quote. He shared the quote, and it was irresponsible. And I think I don't believe in cancel culture either. Like, I'm going to meet Kyrie sooner or later, and I'm going to ask him, like, what was up with that? Like, why would you, like, I know you don't hate Jews, so why would you influence your 15.5 million followers, more followers in the Jewish population,
right,
to even think that you believe it? But my problem with Kyrie is his unwillingness to apologize. You messed up, period, end of story. You don't want to acknowledge it, that's fine. But whether you meant it or not, you hurt the Jewish community. And not only did you hurt the Jewish community, you're influencing people to believe in stupidity.
So
now that you've done that, apologize.
So let's push back on that a little bit. If you look at history, again, we're going back to history because it's right there, it's easy. That's not the first time people who seemed normal, right? I don't want to say loving people, but just regular folks, right? Not hating anyone, just living their lives. Suddenly, you said, reach some sort of an intersection, a crossroad, a fork in the road, and they make the, well, wrong choice for us, choose, but they make that choice, right? They kind of go, why is that? And then they also don't feel, they don't feel like they're doing something terrible. I'm not talking about someone who's like, oh, shit, I really like Jews, but no, a lot of them, when you talk to them, they feel justified in their emotions. In fact, what we're seeing more and more, and these days are actually proving that point as well, is that when someone influential like Ye or whatever will say something, you'll see a lot of the people who, you know, will never speak out, they're nodding, you know, they're agreeing, meaning he's voicing something that people have inside of them.
It's not even logical. It's not even logical. It's like some hunger inside of them, or some feeling inside that comes out.
Yeah. What is that all about? In other words, we're asking you, what do you think is the source of that? Of these feelings. I mean, people are not just making mistakes, you know. Ye didn't make a $2 billion mistake. Kyrie, maybe he did make a wrong choice somewhere, but again, he understands what's at stake and what's going on. People don't,
you know. I'll give you like a little, I guess, a comparison. I've been obsessive lately, like obsessive as to how did the world let the world come to a place where the Holocaust happened. So okay. You study like society and you study the Germans and you study the Nazis and all that stuff. And the question is literally, how did society get to a point where it became okay for the Germans to conquer and then slaughter the more than the Jews, but mostly the Jews? And I found the common denominator. We're talking about history. When people are lost, they tend to find a scapegoat. Now, the question I don't have the answer to is why are the Jews always the scapegoat? I don't know. But it seems to be a common pattern that the Jews end up always becoming the scapegoats. And for people that are lost and searching for their identity and can't seem to find an answer, or there's some hole that needs to be satisfied, it's like, blame the Jews.
We have a theory about why it's the Jews, but let me ask an easier question.
We have an episode about it, episode 18 in our podcast.
Maybe that's the one. We'll
Architects of Mass Psychosis. We'll put it in.
Let's link that in the description of this episode too. But Emily, do you think people are lost today?
Yeah. This thing messed up our brains. Okay. Our attention spans are shorter. We get our information from TikTok. Misinformation is being spread like wildfire. We're being censored from selective things that the government feels like showing us or not. We don't live in a normal world anymore. You know, relationships like are being ruined. Oh, why'd you like her picture? And why'd you follow this one? The phones never made it easier to connect with one another, which sounds like a beautiful thing, but it's also never been easier to tweet. And then you tweet something you didn't think twice and it ruins your life, or you hurt a community, or you wrote something insulting because you were impulsive with emotion. And it's never been in history that you could just get a message out like this, you know? And with this new phone, and everyone's like obsession with it. And, you know, you don't really meet people, at least in the United States, without a cell phone at this point. It's just ruining everyone's brain and it's ruining everything good about society.
So when people are lost, they look for a scapegoat. For some reason, the scapegoat is the Jews through history. So if people today seem like they're getting more and more lost and they're going to need a scapegoat, and if it's going to be the Jews, so we're saying, what can we do about that? And it seems to us that saying, for example, somebody says something anti-Semitic, and then we say, don't say that, that's anti-Semitic. And then someone else says something anti-Semitic, and we say, you can't say that, that's anti-Semitic. It seems to us that that's not a good solution. However, that seems to be the main way of combating anti-Semitism. And our feeling is that if we can get the Jewish people to come together, because it's such a diverse group, if we can start to unite amongst us, that from that unity, out of that unity.
I want to interject just something, just a touch of science. I don't want to make this a geek out on science, but just a little something. There's something called, because we mentioned the mass psychosis. There's something called mass hypnosis. It's somewhat the same, right? It's called mass formation, right? Or formatting.
It's kind of like how you had normal German people
There's a whole theory about it. There's like a lot of interesting things about it, but
I kind of like the woke mob today in a sense.
I want to take it. There's just the four conditions that they've identified that leads to this kind of change, right? This change in mindset. The first condition, which is interesting, Emily just said, first condition is lack of social cohesion or social connection. That's the first condition. People have to feel some sort of social isolation, feel that they're not connected socially to others. And in 2021, the Center on American Life did a survey, and it showed that people lost friendships. In 1990, only 3% of Americans said they don't have close friends. Today, can you guess the number? 12%.
Oh.
Well, it's still, no, it's still four times more, right? It's a big part of the population. 12%, meaning out of 300 million Americans, more or less, yeah. You have, right, 12%. They say that they don't, right? So millions of people said we don't have close friends. And then the second condition is, you know, comes out of the first condition, and that is people feel that their lives are meaningless. That's the second thing. And that may have to do with faith, belief, maybe. I'm not saying, I'm just, and they said that, you know, 50% of people feel that their work is not meaningful. They're doing bullshit jobs, as it's called. And only 13% out of 100 million workers worldwide, only 13% feel any sort of connection, you know, commitment to their work. Only that number. The rest feel they're doing. So people isolated and feel like they're doing, you know, they have no meaning. The third thing in third condition is called free anxiety, or a floating anxiety, which means it's not connected to a particular object or like a real cause, right? It's just a general, like people say, oh, I had a, you know, an anxiety attack or a panic attack. About what? I don't know. I just felt, right? A lot of that. And it comes from, you know,
giving me an anxiety attack. Cut to the chase. I feel terrible already.
Okay. Well, this is, it all has a happy ending, you know, if we make it so. And the outcome of that, the option of that is using antidepressants, right? 300 million, listen to that, in Belgium, right? It's a tiny country. It's great. They have good beer. Every year they hand out 300 million portions of antidepressants to a population of 11 million. Yeah, that's just in Belgium. And over 30% of people are affected by anxiety around the world, right? So a third of the world is like in a perpetual sense of anxiety. And the last condition, and this is where the, you know, science lecture ends, the last condition is that you have to have feelings of aggression and frustration, again, that are not aimed at a particular object. So just a general sense of anxiety and then a general sense of aggression. Now, all those things sound familiar. Does it seem like we're living in a world that's...
It's a clear common denominator. It's just in each circumstance, people are unhappy. You're depressed, you're unhappy. You hate your work, you're unhappy. You don't have friends, you're unhappy. You're lonely.
So the bottom line of this, if all four conditions exist, then if a certain leader starts to propagate a certain narrative, that process of mass psychosis, mass hypnosis will start, basically. And
you mentioned the woke mob. You think they're not brainwashed?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Out of touch with reality, people I've ever seen.
Absolutely. So my point is, what we're saying, I think, what we're trying to say, and I was just trying to back it scientifically, so it's not just an idea, is that we're at a time where the people are primed for this mass psychosis, and people who understand this, they're trying to make use of it, whether consciously or subconsciously, you know. So the woke movement, you know, the yays of the world, the Trumps of the world, it doesn't matter. Everybody in this feels that the masses are mobilized. They have all the symptoms, right? The isolation, the meaningless life, the anxiety and the aggression, it's there. Now just nudge them in a certain direction. So it's a great time now. It can also be an amazing time for a positive change. And this is where where we come into play. What can we do about it?
I have a little harsh theory on it.
Okay.
I think it's very important, if you identify as a Jew, to present yourself in the best way as you can. You know, I always wear a Star of David. You know, I talk like it's so important in my life. So a lot of times in regular conversations, me being a Jew comes up just casually. And with that being said, now, especially on social media, on the big world, I'm Emily Austin, and I'm also a Jew now because I chose to identify publicly as one, which is great. Everyone should, in my opinion. And that comes with the responsibility of, if I mess up, I represent the Jewish people. Even though I don't, that's how society takes it. So Bernie Madoff, for example, I hate when people keep saying, Bernie was a Jew, you're all criminals. No, he was a criminal. He doesn't represent who I am. He doesn't represent who my family is. He doesn't represent the state of New York. And people love to categorize us the same way. If an African-American robs a store, oh, they're all thieves and robbers. No, they're not. It was one person. And the problem with our society is people categorize too much. But until, you know, the society smartens up a little bit, it is your responsibility as a human being to present yourself in like a respectful manner. And a lot of the times, yes, the Jews act arrogant. And yes, the wealthy Jews are snobby. And yes, they're rude. And yes, we're this and that and that and that. And take the Judaism out of it for one second. As a human being, you should be better than that. But now you wear your Magen David, act a little class, you know, because then if that was the first, if that was this person's first time speaking to a Jew and you were that first Jew and you were POS, they're going to remember that for the rest of their life. But on the contrary, I went to Italy and I met a guy and he'd never met a Jew before. He was so far gone with what a Jew is. He asked me where my tattoo was because he thought every Jew was born and you got a barcode. But he wasn't joking. Yeah. That's, he never learned about the Holocaust. He never learned about Judaism. He didn't even meet a Jew in his life in Rome, Italy. Crazy. And I was the first Jew he'd ever met. Now, at first, I was so mad. I thought he was joking. But he said I wasn't joking. I was like, oh, my God, like I'm 16 years old right now. I'm on a cruise with my family. I need to educate this kid right now. Otherwise, he's going to hate Jews for the rest of his life if I walk away angry. And I sat there and I told him, like, no, you learned who Hitler was, right? Okay. He put the tattoos. He killed 6 million of us. I live in America. And I kind of taught him like the reality of being a Jew. I said, there's so many Jews in Italy. And that kid probably, it probably resonated with him. I was the first Jew he'd ever met. But that same opportunity could have went the opposite direction. He could have hated Jews now, just from that one interaction.
So maybe what I'm hearing you saying, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm asking, is it fair to say that because we're judged as a collective, maybe we should begin to behave as a collective instead of trying to shed that, you know, responsibility? Because we're a small collective. It's not like billions. Yeah. It's no. 15 million. Maybe we could do it. Maybe we can behave as an amazing collective.
You can, because there's evil in the world. It's not a religious thing. People are evil and you can't control that.
So can we start? Can we make a subgroup and start with the ones who
make a subreddit?
Collect all the ones who want to do good, who want to present this image? Can we all figure out a way to get along amongst us?
And I think it's more than getting along. It's not supposed to be like a separated thing. It's not supposed to be us versus them. And I know you guys keep mentioning how the Jews need to unite, but it's more than that. You have to take it a step further. Yes, that's very important, but that's still isolating ourselves from the rest of the world. It's like the Jews need to unite, but we also need to unite with the ones who aren't Jews. So otherwise, we're still equally as isolated.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. So we have an answer for that as well.
I don't think anyone else is doing what we're doing. And yeah, and that's exactly it. No, nobody can comprehend what we're talking about. Who would even say that anti-Semites have anything valuable to say without saying we're anti-Semitic or we're self-hating Jews? But there's something that everybody's missing in this whole picture. And the reason why the solution is so close is because we're not waiting for anyone else to change. We're not waiting for laws to be enacted. We're not waiting for a new politician to get elected. The answer is way closer than everybody thinks.
Like us, hit the bell thing on the YouTube so you can get a notification when a new episode is up. Well, this is the Jew Function, and let's get back to our guest. We have an answer for that as well. We're not saying that we need to unite in order to protect the Jews. Rather, when you read, this is where network science comes to aid, and also our sources, our Jewish sources. You know, any calamity that comes to the world comes because of the Jews. You have all these quotes by Rav Kook, and also you have Rabbi Elazar, who spoke about the need to have our Arvut, mutual guarantee to the whole world. Like, so there's a lot of that. However, like with every big change in nature, it doesn't happen all at once, right? Things happen in a small place, and then they ripple out. Just like when you make a decision, right? It starts in your head, right? There's a decision, then the whole body follows.
Right.
So that's the only reason we're saying we need to create this subgroup,
The goal is for you, is for all of humanity.
Right.
We're looking at that as a huge endeavor and trying to understand where can, you know, like to get the entire car to move, all you need is one key, you know? So we're trying to say, we want, yeah, of course, it's stupid to just isolate ourselves and make some, you know, special place where we all go together and dance in circles and bagels. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about for all humanity. But, and of course, all of us every single day interact with people from all religions and everything. So it's not about isolating, but it's saying, where, what can we do now? Where is the key that can move the whole car? And it seems to us.
Okay. My answer, short answer, would be to not think of yourself as I'm just one person, I can't make a difference, because that's the falsest thing from reality. You can make a difference. You can make a difference. I can make a difference. My mom can make a difference. My sister, anyone can make a difference, because it's just, it's human interactions that change people's perspectives. It's nothing else. Obviously, yes, social media interactions too, but that reflects still human interactions. And, you know, that story of me in Italy just really reflects like one thing I did, but who knows how he went on with the rest of his life,
how it reverberates.
He now perceives Jews, how he told his friends about it. And it's kind of like that domino effect where it's like you influence one person, that person influences one person, that person influences two, and it keeps growing and growing and growing into this bigger picture. And it all started because of you.
So
I want people to understand you can make a difference just by being a good person. So just carry yourself as a good person. Try to be a good person, especially if you identify as a Jew. Now you're obligated to, because now you represent us.
Right. So I want to give you a little, a bonus to this proposition, because apparently science found out that not only you influence people by talking to one person who will talk to two and they will talk to four, et cetera, right? That's just like, the usual way that we think of information, that can travel in a network, but rather things happen in a nonverbal way as well. Emotions, feelings travel in a network faster than the speed of light. There's a great book, it's called Connected by Nicholas Christakis and Chris Fowler. Have you heard of that book? It's a great book. We'll send you that book. They because we have huge computers these days, we can handle a lot of data, right? Big data.
Yeah.
We can crunch numbers that we're not able to do before and see patterns where before we were just able to see what's right in front of us. And they saw that our influence on one another is far more profound than simply this linear interaction. So if you have a friend of a friend of a friend of yours lights up a cigarette right now, there's a 2.6% chance that you would somehow crave a cigarette a bit more, right? And it goes with sexual preferences and political opinions and ideas about people and tastes in fashion and in food and all everything. I mean, we live in a network, and it really is, and it really
means there's all these wires between our hearts, even
invisible
if we
wires.
Don't. Of course, through our thoughts, like you're saying, when you're talking to someone, and also between our hearts, that we also don't feel yet. But obviously, sometimes we're thinking about our mom and she calls us. I mean, we all have examples in our life. Or, you look at someone on the highway and then they turn around and look at you. We all know that there are these invisible things. We, if you could pour powder on them, like in the movies over the lasers, we'd see them. So we're kind of discovering, or we are discovering now, more and more that these connections between all of our hearts exist, and let's make use of that network as well.
That's exactly what we're saying. Exactly. Meaning now, and here's the part where the Jews come into play. And when we say Jews, by the way, we don't mean the believing Jews or the non-believing Jews. We mean anyone who has this desire for unity. That's what, if people listen to this podcast enough, they know that if you feel that, you're invited to join. Just like you said, people can convert into Judaism. You know why? Because it's not about what you believe or anything. It's about this role you have to play in the world.
Yeah.
So we say anyone who feels that calling needs to, or should probably wake up to it. And it's great because it means that they are sort of designated hub in the network, which means they carry more influence. Unwittingly, for whatever reason, we don't know it right now, but for whatever reason, you're an employee.
Somehow, some of these heart
strings,
lighthouses, seem to be stronger in the network. It seems to be that some people's influence flows through the network in somehow of a more connected, powerful way, we think it goes back, if you follow who we are, that the people of Israel, when we started with Abraham there, it was a group of all of the different tribes that were together. It wasn't just whites, it wasn't just blacks, it wasn't just yellows. It was a mix of all of the people.
Representatives of all the nations.
That were together. So the root of who we are actually is like a microcosm of all of humanity. So we have in us this connection that
meaning not just the responsibility to do it, but the ability to do it, to bring about profound change.
It's like a person like you has the ability, not only in thoughts and speaking to Kyrie, which I'm very excited for that interview, and it'd be really interesting to see how you can change someone by that, but also through your heart lighthouse, you're also projecting and influencing countless, maybe millions of people, small at first, but through this kind of, you know, just the fact that we're having these conversations and looking for this solution, it's already influencing the network. And a person like you has the ability to reach a lot of people.
So does that sound crazy?
You know, today being normal is a little crazy. I think we're on the same wavelength here, but you'd be surprised how something that I would perceive as normal is looked at so weird in today's world. And I'm like, am I crazy?
Well, would you like to be crazy with us?
You know? Yeah.
Cool. All right. So
let's do it.
That's enough. That's more than enough. No, there are a lot of people, by the way. We are meeting not just on this podcast. We know friends from around the, we have friends from around the world in the most unlikely places. I mean, people in Iran, people in in Arab speaking countries, in African countries. We have people who are committed to this idea. And the good news is that it doesn't need to take hundreds of years. It's enough if about 10% of the population holds on to a new idea, and it will sweep through the rest of the network. Again, just like in our body, you know, my left toe doesn't care where I go. As long as the head made a decision, the body kind of, for the most part, follows. Right, there's pushback on certain things, but you know, if you're, you know, strong-willed and focused, you can do it, right? Yeah. So it's the same thing with humanity.
I agree.
So now the question is, I think that we left before, is the whole idea of faith. Where does the faith come into play here? Do we need this concept? Where, how do we include it?
You know, I was talking about my mission of studying society lately. I've always felt like, you know, kind of growing up in this little bubble, being a Long Island, being Jewish, being white and blonde, and you know, I have been pretty selfish. I've never bothered to study things that don't pertain to me. And lately, as I'm getting out of this little bubble, it's been bothering me because I don't think I understand other people enough. And to answer your question, I would need to really thoroughly like engage in studying how other people think, because I can only tell you how important faith is to me. Like, I'd be lying to you if I had a perfect answer, like, oh, here's why faith is so good for society as a whole. No, for me, it gives me something to believe in. Like, life will never be meaningless. I always fear something. I love something. I'll have someone to blame when I'm mad at the Holocaust. You know, it's just this bigger light, bigger picture for me. Now, like I said, when it comes to atheists, I just, my brain cannot comprehend how their brain works. But that's something I'm willing to like kind of study and take on as like a new project. Like, I'm trying to really study like society and, you know, what resonates with people and what doesn't. What kind of people were atheists and who weren't. And once I start to learn about that more, I think I'll have a better answer.
You want to say something, Seth? Because no. We found some interesting definition, a different definition for faith. Again, in our Jewish texts, when you dig deep enough, kind of past the popular or traditional, right, framework of what the Jewish faith is and what the customs are and all those things. This is kind of like a nice little husk that kind of kept the people together, right, more or less. But there's more layers to that. And we found that when the texts talk about faith, they don't talk about this idea of just believing something that you can't see, because as you said, everyone can believe whatever they want, and you know, rather faith is a connection with the quality of love in nature.
I love that.
Right?
That's cute.
it's a feeling that you get. It's a real feeling that you get when you try to be like this quality of love. It's almost to make an analogy, it's almost like saying to someone, hey, there's electricity here flowing, and be like, what do you mean? I don't see electricity. I'm like, no, touch it, you know, and then you feel it, right? It has to flow in something, right? The same way. If you just talk about it in abstract terms, then it's just like, I believe, I don't believe. No, if it's a quality, if it's an expression of the quality of love, and you try to be like love, you want to touch it like that, then you begin to feel it, and then it stops being this abstract thing. You actually begin to tap.
I'm gonna try that today.
Good. Good. This is, I think this is amazing. Okay. Yeah, you're back.
The it's not mystical or magical, Emily, but really where we feel that the solution is, it's not just in lawyering up. It's not just in that we have to go stand and talk to every single anti-Semite. It's somehow, we all feel it right now. Something's happening, right? There's some connection that we can have. And this is, you know, opening up these channels, this faith, this whatever it is between all of us, and that is real, and that somehow that held us for all these thousands of years. And somehow everybody is hungry for that. You know, not that they need to go buy something in order to feel okay, or not that they need to get somewhere to feel okay, but that somehow these channels of faith, love, whatever can open up between people, and people can start to wake up in the morning and feel everything's going to be okay. We can do this together. And we feel that there's a certain group of people who have some kind of responsibility to do that, at least to who. That the problem is, like you say about atheists, for whatever reason, some people are like that, but there's certain people who are primed to want to do this, who are primed to be ready to do this. That's what we're calling Jew right now. Just the ones who say, who feel it, who kind of have it in their guts and are ready for it.
And when the anti-Semites don't get that from us, that's
where the hatred comes from.
That's what they react to.
Unconsciously feel that we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
And that's why nothing we'll do will ever be good enough for them. And at the same time, nothing that they will do will be able to completely destroy the Jews, because the system needs it. Nature needs those people.
So until that feeling is flowing through the system, they're constantly going to be pressuring us, whether they understand why or not.
Right.
I have a quote here from Rav Yehuda Ashlag Baal HaSulam. He wrote the commentary on he translated and wrote the commentary on the Book of Zohar, and it was one of the greatest Kabbalists of the 20th century. And he wrote, "When every individual will understand, when every individual will understand that his benefit and the benefit of the public is one, by that the world will reach its complete correction."
Wow. I love that.
You've been amazing. We really enjoyed every moment of talking to you, Emily. I hope we can talk again. I hope we can stay connected.
Yeah, for sure.
And keep this circle of crazies. We like that. And
for sure.
And you know, we're the Jew Function. We're trying to find the function of the Jews. And I want to thank everyone else who watched this. And Emily will keep us posted on her podcast coming up February, right?
Yeah.
And you know, like us, follow us, share, comment, hit the bell, everything you got to do to stay connected to the Jew Function, because this is where we solve anti-Semitism. So thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Emily. Take care, Leo.
Take care. Enjoy.